I come from a tradition and a business consulting school that completely, ignored love. It would be unthinkable. When I started in the big firms in the 90s, like, you would have brought love, people would have looked at you with very weird, like, you'd almost been fired if you kept coming back with this topic. So I come from this tradition, and I think it took me a good, decade or two to really reconcile the part and understand that there is absolutely a possibility, and actually it should come first.
Hello and welcome to Love as a Business Strategy, a podcast that brings humanity to the workplace. We're here to talk about business, but we want to tackle topics that most business leaders shy away from. And we believe that humanity and love should be at the center of every successful business. I'm your host, Jeff Ma, and as always, I'm here to have conversations and hear stories about how real people and real businesses might operate in the real world. My guest today is Guillaume Viat, and Guillaume is the creator of Strategic Narrative, the business strategy consulting and coaching methodology for entrepreneurial leaders of professional services firms. Through his company, MetaHelm, he steers experts, CEOs, and leadership teams to build a successful business they also love by growing narrative power, the leadership ability to defy the normal when the normal is wrong. A former big firm strategist, Guillaume has also founded 4 B2B ventures. His expertise is sought by clients ranging from solopreneurs to global organizations like Microsoft, Spencer Stewart, AIG, Symrise, and the Gates Foundation. Guillaume loves teaching and mentoring entrepreneurs at startup incubators and at the University of Washington's Master of Science in Entrepreneurship, which is ranked 3 in the US. And so I'm very happy and very excited to welcome Guillaume to the show. How are you today?
Jeff, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for asking. I had a great start of the day and I love being here.
What makes a great start of the day for you? I think when I ask, how are you doing? There's always the, I'm good. And it's very generic. Yeah. Sounds like you're having a genuinely good day. What happened?
I naturally wake up at 4:40 or 50 without an alarm clock.
Oof.
Sorry, 5:40 or 5:50 without an alarm clock. Yeah.
Still early.
Yeah. And then I'm an early bird. My energy and I'm immediately is high. So just a quick cup of coffee and I put my running shoes on and I go for a walk / run. I live at the top of a hill, so what goes down must go back up. And I run that hill for an hour, and I do this 5 to 6 days a week, and just sets me up for a great day every time. So
amazing. Well, I can't do any of that. I need my alarm, and I definitely don't leave the house until midday. But that's very impressive.
And I think it's okay. And here, let's just jump right in the topic of narrative. There is this narrative about morning routines and how they have to happen and all that. And I'm listening to all of these people who prescribe those routines, and I'm like, there is no way I can do that. And my belief is that everybody should be able to choose the routine they want and they like. There is no right or wrong way to do it.
I love that instant connection before we've even started. And that's amazing. We're going to dive into that. And as is my custom, I first want to ask you about you. And I want to specifically know what your passion is and how you came to find that passion.
My passion is to connect the traditionally ignored disciplines in the business world to business. So that's a broad topic here. But I am an artist. I am a business person. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a dad. And I see connections with all of those areas, if you will. And I believe that to run successful businesses, when you make those connections, you're much more likely to succeed, to create something of value that has impact and that fulfills your life. So that's my overall passion in life. I'm able to say this today after 50 years on this planet, because I looked back, I'm like, oh, that's what I'm here to do. But in the beginning, that was absolutely not clear to me. Like, why is it that I'm curious like that? Why is it that I'm changing left and right? There is a common thread, which is entrepreneurship and consulting. I was very influenced by two cultures as I grew up in France, in Normandy. On my mom's side, we've got a series of entrepreneurs, small businesses mainly, you know, factories for apparel, accessories, buttons, zippers, and things like that. And on my dad's side, it's, you know, all about medicine. He's a doctor, he's a surgeon. And so I've always been influenced by those two things. No one in my, except for my mom, no one in my family has a boss or is employed. They all run their businesses. So I come from that womb, cultural womb. And I don't seem to be able to get out of it because I like it. And so, so I was fortunate enough to be raised by parents who gave me enormous, generous access to anything that sparked my curiosity, art, travel, connections of all sorts. And so I was able to, at a young age, you know, just fuel my life with all sorts of discoveries, engineering even. And I've been a consultant for 27 years. I started at age 21 as I was a student. This is what I want. I instantly fell in love with that profession. That's what I wanted to do. I ebbed and flow a little bit. This is being a consultant, lifelong consultant is not a straight line. It's very, you know, I had ups and downs and I did different things left and right. For instance, I went back to conservatory and got a degree in jazz piano at age 31. But I was still consulting. So that's, I guess, now that I maybe listen to myself a little bit, thanks to your question, my passion in life is curiosity, I guess, but through business and entrepreneurship.
I believe that curiosity as a passion is one of the very best to have. I think it opens up, it keeps all possibilities open.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It's cool.
So I want to talk obviously today about narratives. And I think as you have created strategic narrative, but as a word, narrative can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So maybe you could start us off by defining narrative as you understand it and maybe helping us kind of start that journey.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great place to start, Jeff. So if you open a dictionary and look for the definition of narrative, you'll find a definition that is very close to what a story is. And that's the kind of the mainstream, you know, use of that word. It's some basically at a very, very basic level, at atomic level, it's something that happens to someone, right? And the human, actually our species, our current species is natural storytellers. We're natural storytellers. And the reason why I say this is because it's been proven by historian and researchers that we managed to survive other species thanks to our ability to tell stories. And very importantly, thanks to our ability to tell stories to ourselves, amongst themselves, but individually to ourselves. And what comes with storytelling is the possibility to look at reality and express it in many different ways. So if you and I look at the same thing, say a glass half empty or half full, you may choose to tell that story from two different perspectives, two different narratives. One being, hey, the glass is half full. It's awesome. I have water. It's positive. And the other one's like, oh, the glass is half empty. I already drank all that. I'm running out of water. I'm stretching the narrative here. But basically, the same story can be told here. I just gave you two different examples, but can be told 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 ways different. And what's very important to understand is that difference between story and narratives. It's a difference that is very well known and accepted in fields like social justice, religion, politics, interestingly less in business. We're still at an early stage in our use of business storytelling. And one way to think about storytelling that I find outdated, and that to me is kind of dead, is to think of storytelling as just this marketing technique that tricks people into hooking them to some kind of story that will help you sell more stuff, right? So, but like in any discipline, you know, you start off by doing, by trying a bunch of stuff, and some is good, some is not good. Like if you like music, the use of our synthesizer in the 80s music, there's some awesome stuff and there's some terrible stuff. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for storytelling in business. So a narrative is something that, think of it as a system of stories. Think of something as a system that is open-ended versus a story is closed-ended. Typically, if you go see a good movie, there is a great story. There is the beginning, there's a middle, probably a problem, and there's an end. In Hollywood, the end is usually happy. In French cinema, there is no end sometimes, but that's a different conversation. And so narratives are these things that are just constantly changing, constantly moving. There are big systems. Think about the narrative about, as I said before, the narrative about society right now, the narrative about diversity and inclusion, say, you know, we may interpret what is going on and that reality from many, many different angles. So if you start with that core definition of what a narrative is, hopefully you start seeing what the possibilities might be way, 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 way beyond just hooking people with a great marketing hook and selling them stuff. A narrative enables you to gain the power to change, the power to confront the status quo, evolve things, and decide that you're going to go another route. So when you are an entrepreneur, when you're running a service organization and you see that something is not right, you get to change that narrative if you want and if you can. And that's the power of narrative.
What you shared is really, really resonating with me. And I feel like in my mind, it's connecting and morphing along with some of the things that I typically love to talk about. And one of those is basically our mindsets.
Yep.
And it sounds like what you're saying is that crafting your narrative is keeping it open-ended. I take it akin to having a growth mindset and having a mindset that's open to changing our belief systems, really kind of what we're ingrained in, what we already understand, and being open to challenging those. Is that the same thing? Am I close, or what's the difference there?
You're spot on for one particular layer. So you went to the mindset layer, and it's interesting because when I have other conversations, most people will gravitate towards the language side of a narrative. And there's a third side that we'll talk about in just a moment. But you're spot on. A narrative happens first in your head. And that's why I say that, you know, we're fortunate to have this cognitive ability as a species, because when confronted with hardship or wars, things like that, we can decide if we want to, you know, fight and survive. And in our mind, if we tell the right story, we're more likely to succeed. Or if we are starving, or if we feel like we're missing something, we can tell ourselves this narrative about abundance and now be in a growth mindset. So see, there is you're spot on. The second layer is language. You know, that's, we just talked about what I call the inner narrative. And we can decide to reframe it to get more growth-minded. But then we have this fabulous thing that is our language. You know, we can talk, we can draw, we can express ourselves in so many ways. And we're a species that is smart to have invented all sorts of instruments. We can play music, we can take photography, so we have this ability to take it from within to the outside, and that's when we get to influence people. So now we can bring other people into our narrative. So that's the second facet. The third layer that I just announced a minute ago is the way we behave. Many, many, many times, almost all of the time, the narrative is there without us thinking anything or saying anything. If you go into a business meeting, or you go to a lawyer's office, right? I'm going to take that example. So traditionally, lawyers are trained to set their offices in a specific way. Or I'll take a doctor's office, because I'll take my dad's example. In my doctor's office, you would come in, and first, you don't talk to the doctor directly. You have to wait and show up at the reception. And then somewhere, probably in the office, in the wait room, you might see a diploma hung on the wall. And the way that this room is set up just screams expertise, screams a frame, screams a narrative that invites you to maybe show, you know, pay some respect to that process. And there's a whole sorts of codes. So that's the unspoken. And in our companies and in our organizations, it's our processes, our systems. It's the way, it's our, you know, sometimes the colors we choose, the brand identity. I mean, although this is, we're getting a little bit to the expression side of a narrative. So three things to summarize: mindset, language, and processes. These are the three levers with which you can craft a better narrative.
The dots are super connecting right now, and it's incredible to hear you frame it this way. Because I'll tell you, because in Love as a Business Strategy, in our framework and everything, we root everything in behavior, right?
When we
talk about what's the difference to make in a workplace, what's the change to impact, it always comes from a behavior. And we define behavior as having elements of mindset, our attitudes, and our communication, which is your language, essentially.
It's similar.
And, it's not one-to-one, but very, very much like following what you're saying. I'm really excited to hear you frame it this way, because one of the reasons I continue to do this show, actually, is to continue seeing the same elements being interpreted and communicated in different ways, and in your particular perspective is super interesting to me.
I read your book, I went, I came across that framework that you have, and I'm like, yeah, this is it. They did exactly that. They changed the narrative for their firm.
I love it. Yeah, this is exciting to me. And I guess I want to, the next place my mind goes is wondering, in your strategic narrative, in your methodology, what is the ask, I guess? What is, now that we understand there's this mindset, language, and process elements, what is the right way or the best way to go about, what is the change you're trying to impact, and how do people do it?
So I serve, first of all, I want to make sure the context is clear here. I serve B2B organizations, and mostly service B2B organizations. So consultants, coaches, marketing agencies, some tech organizations that have a service components to it. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to build businesses that grow successfully. And more I'm seeing people interested in having a business that also has a social impact. And that's more for them, for the founders too. They're trying to, generate demand, although I don't believe you can generate demand, you can capture it, but that's the general term. So the ask is to look at their organization from a holistic point of view, not just silo the observation of the narrative. Most people will think that the narrative is marketing stuff. It's like, oh yeah, you want to. Oh, strategic narrative, that must be marketing thing. That's PR, ads, and so on. The ask is to look at beyond this, like including you as a leader. I have four main disciplines in that approach. And one of them I call visionary leadership. So the ask is to be open-minded enough to, again, think about it as a system. That's number one. Number two, the ask is to first be curious and to step back for a moment and observe what is happening between the dots or the lines or the bullet points, right? What is not necessarily said. And to base, so it's data gathering. So and I help with that when I work with some of my clients. I also, because I am obviously an outsider, I come with a fresh perspective. I help with that, but I teach people how to be more curious. And the third ask is to be willing to take the risk and at least be authentic in choosing to take the risk to make a change, you know, wherever that might be. So in the four, I talked to you about one of the disciplines, visionary leadership, there's three others. Another one I call meaningful marketing, like how do you help your business find its relevance in the world? That's my definition of marketing. So aligning with ideal clients. Then the next one is how do you operate from a place of purpose, like intentionally building a team that has, you know, that is aligned on purpose and mission. And the fourth one is authentic selling and replacing the art of selling as the noble art of serving your clients for that specific purpose that I just talked about. So that's the ask right there. It sounds very, I mean, I finally, I'm able to make it hopefully sound simple, but it's not easy. It's not easy. I have to recognize this is not for everyone. This is for people who are mostly interested in change. So I call them change makers, whether that change is personal, societal, environmental, or just, let me take the just back, or for their clients, like impacting, you know, who they serve. And I think there is an interesting thing happening these days is the kind of the confusion between having an impact and serving people. Like, you know, we all get excited about this possibility now to have businesses that will probably change the planet or, you know, disrupt market and so on. It's really buzz termy. It's, you know, there's a lot of a buzz there. But I think starting with something more humble and say, if I can just change somebody's world, I will have an impact. Is that so? That's maybe another nuance in my ask.
That's great. And, you know, obviously this is love as a business strategy. So my natural kind of next line of questioning is moving into love. And mm-hmm. I think there's some narratives around love itself as a concept and as a word that, you know, everybody, if I just say the word love with no context, you know, there's already a number of different perspectives and mindsets around how people perceive that, how people process and really interact with that concept. I'm curious what your narrative around love is and also where that fits within the strategic narrative system.
It's a powerful question because I think that I'm finally starting to get an answer to this question for myself. But I come from a tradition and a business consulting school that completely, you know, ignored love. It would be unthinkable. When I started in the big firms in the 90s, like you would have brought love, people would have looked at you with very weird, like you'd almost been fired if you kept coming back with this topic. So I come from this tradition, and I think it took me a good, you know, decade or two to really reconcile the part and understand that there is absolutely a possibility, and actually it should come first in everything that you do. The first time I sensed this possibility was around 2001. I was working on a large e-business project with a big corporation, and they brought me on to fix a technical problem. And I noticed something. I didn't say love at the time, but I could tell in the first kickoff 30 minutes meeting where I was actually leading this meeting, there's no humanity. It's just like, it's almost like everybody had left their humanity at the door. And I derailed my own agenda, and I asked if they were okay to take a piece of paper and draw the project that was stuck. they're a little shocked, like what is he trying, some kind of shrink, or does he have a crystal ball? I could read this in their eyes. They did it, and that immediately brought that humanity back to the conversation. So today in strategic narrative, love is essential as one of the core values. And whenever I feel fear or I sense stress, when I work on a client project or I interact with my clients during like a coaching session or with a group, if I feel this, I'm like, what could I do? What could I do to bring love to this conversation? And I have something on here on my desk. It's a rose gemstone. And that stone was given to one of our friends for a wedding. And he gave this as a gift, telling us that everybody in the wedding had touched that stone with loving thoughts. And I always have it on my desk, because whenever I feel this, I grab that stone and it's immediately like I'm connected to love. And I'm like, okay, what is it I could do? So very practically, I could, you know, slow down and listen more and pay attention and empathize more and just, you know, take people where they are. So, oh my gosh, this is a huge topic, Jeff. Do you realize? I mean, obviously, you know. This is a very powerful question. Thanks for asking me.
Of course. I mean, you can't come on Love as a Business Strategy and avoid the word. But I think to kind of build on top of that, you know, one of the challenges that I face in speaking to people about love is that when we start with the business first, or even some layers that feel deeper, just like leadership and teams, interpersonal relationships, all these things connected to love, I find that what I'm kind of connecting today with you is that we're not always successful in addressing the individual's narrative, their own belief systems around what love really is before we start tackling the bigger problems. And sometimes it's because we say love, we try to define it, but this person, their life experience, their culture has told them that love is soft, and love, it means people walk all over you, that love includes abusive relationships, toxic relationships. What does love look like to them? And I think it's so important, as I think of narratives in the way you've defined, is to really be intentional for each person to have the space to really craft and shape their own narrative around love, not to match mine per se, but to take the time to really think about what a loving environment really means to them, to what showing love really looks like and feels like. And these things being established and clear, and being able to have the conversation around that would be so powerful if we treat it as this narrative to first align around, share through our mindset, through our language and our process and behaviors. I'm really excited actually to really connect those concepts for myself and for others.
You are hired at MetaHelm, Jeff. But joke aside, what came to mind when you were describing this opportunity is the possibility to give everyone's space and safe space to define what love, you know, personally and using their language. And so there's this famous book about the languages of love. Mm-hmm. And as that I read this book maybe a year or two ago, so recently, I think it was written a long time ago, and once again reminded me that we all have different ways to express who we are and love in different ways. So I grew up in a family where love meant money, hard work, material abundance. Not necessarily respecting your individual choices. I was told at a very young age that my job my job ideas for my future were limited to maybe a couple. And that's something that I was kind of traumatized for a while because I disagreed and I had no way, I didn't know how to express my disagreement. And I kept internalizing this and finding myself in difficult situations in the early stages of my career because I was making choices that were not congruent with what I thought would be lovable for my life, if I can say that. So I wish there were more spaces where, and I think, and that's what I love about your podcast and the work that you guys did is creating that space. You know, look, even 30 minutes here on your podcast, and we're probably impacting other folks to rethink, and we're giving people an opportunity to also answer these questions if they wish.
Yeah,
just like you did for me.
I appreciate that. Oh. And like, you know, one of the things I'm very passionate about consistently in my own life and for others by extension is around this idea of our mindsets, but also more importantly, those belief systems that drive so many of the things that it's like the hidden driver behind so many of our decisions and our behaviors and our actions. Because whether it's something as, and I'll just throw a bad example out, but you know, like if you grow up in certain cultures where women are supposed to behave a certain way, or a man is like, to be a man, you have to do certain things and certain jobs are better than others and all these core belief systems in people. Right. One of the things I'm very passionate about is finding the ability to challenge these, not because they're wrong inherently, but to better understand where they come from and to find our truth inside of them.
Yeah.
We build them for ourselves because they're important for us to survive in the world, for us to have what I now understand to be narrative around right and wrong, good and bad, these things. But I also think that they can be somewhat of a prison when we don't have the ability to healthy ways challenge them and look at them in different ways and say, you know what, maybe this thing I've believed my entire life is not only not true for me, but definitely not true for others,
right?
And definitely not a universal fact. Right. And when I have this conversation around narrative with you, I'm feeling better equipped to have those conversations, framing it this way, because I think it's such a great way to really bring that big, more difficult concept down to something that I think people relate to more regularly.
Well, you just surfaced another aspect of a narrative, which is narratives are they're essential to our survival. They become almost like they're automatic, you know. One of the narratives we have about about car safety, for instance, is what's the first thing you do when you have a car, you drive, first of all?
Don't want to say buckle up,
right? Okay. Yeah. So that wasn't the case in the before 1959 or 1960.
Yeah,
you would not buckle up because people would believe that if you buckled up and you had a car crash, you would be trapped in the car and you couldn't avoid the, you know, the fire. And we changed that narrative, and now it's automatic. Like it's like even your car reminds you, but most of the time you don't have to be reminded. You just do it. So that's a positive. That's a helpful narrative. Some narratives sometimes are helpful and then become toxic because, you know, things change. And so what you're referring to is this ability of a narrative to evolve and or stay where it is, and us evolving, filling that gap. Right?
Yeah.
So that's exactly what happened with your organization a long time ago. You felt like, okay, no, this is the narrative we created. We started this firm is we've outgrown it. We're actually now making more damage than we should. We have to completely rethink this. And so that's the same at the personal level, team level. Oh, we could go on like this for the
moment. We could go on, but we're out of time. And people
already.
And people keep telling me 30-minute episodes are the sweet spot. So
yeah, I believe that too.
Here we are at 34 minutes or something. But Guillaume, I really want to appreciate you for taking the time today. This has been a great conversation and really helpful for me, but I know it'll help change. I know it's already started the change of some people's narratives, or at least how they view some of their narratives that are listening. So it's very valuable. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jeff. My pleasure. If it could help you already, you know, if you felt that something flipped, or the flip was confirmed in your case, Jeff, then I think we've achieved our mission.
Absolutely. So thank you to Guillaume. Thank you to all the listeners, and thank you to everyone who's supported us and encouraged us along the way. Please continue to check out our book, follow us on social media, all those great things that I will always continue to ask you to do unashamedly. And do subscribe, rate the podcast. Please rate, leave a review for the book on Amazon. I always forget to include that one because those really help get the word out, and we're very passionate about all this. So with that, thank you very much. We will see everybody next week. Hope you have a good one.